Greet you in Jesus' name this morning. I want to continue to lift God up. Well, on the example we heard in Sunday school from the Apostle Paul, the Bible doesn't condemn him for what he did. And I think we don't know what all the Spirit told him, how all the Spirit was working with him. And I think we do well to be careful not to be too judgmental of him, because we don't know what all communication God had with him. The subject I'd like to look at this morning has to do with our Bibles. One of the biggest differences probably between the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Old Testament, we don't get a lot of, or necessarily as much direct direction for our lives from. But one of the biggest differences between the Old Testament and New Testament, our Bibles, and the life that people lived in the Old Testament versus the New Testament, has to do with sacrifices. And I would like to look at that this morning. The subject this morning, I would title the subject An Acceptable Sacrifice, which comes from a New Testament term, and we could spend all morning thinking about that and applying that to our lives. But I'm actually want to focus more on the Old Testament part this morning, and get a background in that helps us to understand a little bit more what the New Testament references to that mean and how they apply to us. And I believe that the Old Testament teaching and practice is to help us to understand the significance of it, help us to understand God and ourselves, and how that helps us to give meaning to the New Testament practice of the sacrifices that we need to make to God. Sacrifice played a very significant role in the Old Testament. The directions, concerns, and commendations that were for their sacrifice in the Old Testament helps us to understand what God is looking for today. So we don't have to do sacrifices as in animal sacrifices or meal sacrifices as they did in the Old Testament. But the direction that God gave there and the teaching and the way he administrated it helps us to understand what kind of sacrifices God is looking for today. We would define sacrifice as the offering of an animal or plant or human life or some material possession to a deity, as in a propitiation or homage, something that's given to God to secure some kind of favor or forgiveness from him. Now, there's also the Old Testament sacrifices also had the aspect of what you might call ritual to them, or there was a set form, and there was a very, very definite pattern that they followed. They had to do things just right, as in the first things first, second things second, and they had to follow the very established pattern. Sometimes in our worship today, and that part is not necessarily carried over to the New Testament, but I think sometimes that it's not so much that God gets tired of ritual or repeated things. Sometimes we think of it in relation to our prayers, that our prayers may follow the same pattern, and it's certainly appropriate to vary them. But I don't think it's so much that God gets tired of us repeating the same words. It's more for our own benefit, so that we stay alert and think about what we're saying and mean what we're saying. Our praise and our worship to God is to be repeated, and he wants to hear it again and again. But in the Old Testament, you'll see a very definite ritual type of thing, very, very definite patterns that he followed, and it was very important. Sacrifice is giving something. Okay, and another way you'd maybe define what I'm talking about there as far as the ritualistic pattern or the intention to give something to God knowingly. Abraham, when these three men visited him and told him that he was going to have a child in his old age, one of them was, one of them was probably Jesus or God himself. It says specifically they were angels. But he fed them, and wasn't necessarily worship. That was hospitality, but it was giving things to God to could have been. But he didn't understand, at least at first, that it was going to God. And that wasn't given. We don't consider that to be a sacrifice or worship. So sacrifice is something that's done to, in the definition that we're using today, it's used, we're using it as a worship, a type of worship to God. Something that's given up to God intentionally and on purpose to worship Him, to show Him our honor. As far as sacrifices go in the Old Testament, they were very much a part the whole way through the Old Testament, starting with Cain and Abel, who it seems like they would have learned it from Adam. They learned somewhere what was expected of them. Of course, Abel made an acceptable sacrifice, and Cain, even though he gave a sacrifice, he didn't follow the order that was given, as we understand it. And his offering was not acceptable, and he rebelled against that and slew his brother. But of course, we think of Noah. When he got out of the ark, he made a sacrifice to God. And we talk about Abraham and Job and Elijah, all made significant sacrifices to God, significant offerings to God through the Old Testament, and that continued until Jesus coming in the New Testament. So it's very much a significant part of the Old Testament, but it's something that we, in the sense that they did it regularly, we don't know anything about it. We don't follow that part at all. Just to try to help us to imagine a little bit, I just want to read a description I came across of how it could have been in the Old Testament, how it likely was. Coming into the ancient Israelite sanctuary, that would have been the tabernacle or the temple. I believe both of them were practiced very similar, at least initially. You entered the courtyard by passing through a screen made of linen, embroidered with blue and purple and red yarns, a colorful hanging curtain you'd go through to get into the house of worship. Again, think of this in relation to how we come to worship God today. This was how they came to worship God in the Old Testament. In front of you is a bronze altar with horns projecting from the tops of its four corners. Smoke is rising from the altar as the remaining fat of the previous evening's sacrifice continues to burn. Ashes have been removed from the altar and the fire is stoked with wood. So you come into this area. It's protected from outside vision, but you come in and there's the altar and the smoke, the evidence of sacrifice from yesterday. It's there. A priest wearing a tunic, a sash around his waist, and a headband comes into the courtyard leading a young sheep. He holds the animal in place near the altar, and another priest hands him a knife. He quickly slits the throat of the sheep so that the blood gushes out into a basin held by the other priest. The sheep bleats, but soon loses consciousness and becomes still. Second priest takes the basin and tosses the blood onto the sides of the altar. Then the priests cut up the sheep and place most pieces of the animal on the altar fire. However, they wash the entrails and lower legs with water to remove any dung and then add these parts to the fire. This is a reconstructed description of the regular morning burnt offering, the smoke of which ascends to God as a pleasing aroma on behalf of the entire nation of Israel. It serves as a token food gift to God, along with the accompanying grain offering and drink offering. So that was kind of the morning ritual, the morning offering that they made every morning in the temple to get it established and get them ready for the day, get the temple ready for worship, ready that it's an appropriate place that people can come and meet God. So different from what we think of today. Many times we think of, well, the Bible says that the offerings, the smoke of that went up as a sweet smell to God. We try to visualize that in burning flesh. It has an odor that we don't think is pleasing at all. But the one thing that did stand out to me there is the way that, and if you look at, is the way they cleaned the entrails and the lower legs of the animal with water. They washed it. They were careful not to burn any dung or dirt of that kind. They kept that away. That was kept out. The entrails were normally removed from an animal before it was offered. So even in the midst of burning flesh, God was careful that the dung was removed and that that was not included with the offering. Just helps to show how careful God was, and he did not want how it was important to him what was offered. This is the way their day began at the temple, tabernacle, and later the temple. According to the Old Testament, sacrifice was a key way to access worship and to interact with God. You could think then of a family coming to worship God. They would come, but before they would leave home, before they would be ready, what's one of the first things they needed to do? Well, they needed to pick out a sacrifice. They needed to pick out something that they were going to offer. And many times that was, for most of the offerings, that was an animal. A perfect lamb or small goat they would pick out before they would leave home. Before you would have left home this morning, you would have wanted to pick out an offering to bring to God's temple, to the tabernacle. And then you'd come, you'd bring that along, and you'd offer that. You'd present that to the priests, and they would offer that to God. And that was their basic pattern of worship. And I don't know if they spent most of the time at the tabernacle before or after that, or if when they had their offering given, they turned around and went home. It was definitely feast days where the offerings were part of it. And they stayed together and worshiped a lot more. But it's so different than we are used to. And yet it was so much a part of God's people. That's what God commanded his people to do in the Old Testament. Now, and that scene, they couldn't worship without bringing the sacrifice of some kind. They brought something along, whether it was either grain, sometimes certain offerings, they brought some grain along, but most times it was an animal of some kind. And some of the offerings, if you were wealthy, you'd bring a calf or a lamb or a goat, and if you were poor, you'd bring a dove or a bird like that. God made provision whether so that all people could be included in it. Now, just picking out one, the Day of Atonement, I believe we would call it was a feast day, was the day that the sins of the past year were covered and their consciences were cleared for the next year. Again, contrasting this to how we, our relationship to God. The Day of Atonement was the day that the sins of the past year were cleared off, wiped away, and their conscience was cleared for the coming year. The high priest confessed the sins of the people with his hand resting on the neck of a sacrificial bull that was killed, and the blood was collected. Two goats then stood before him, and lots were cast to see which goat should be God's and which would be the people's. God's one that was designated for God, was killed, and its blood was mixed with that of the bull. And then that's what the high priest went into the most holy place and took that blood and spread that on the mercy, sprinkled that on the mercy seat. That was to atone for the sins that were past. And then the consciences were cleared by the remaining goat, which received the sins of the people by laying on of hands. And then they take that goat out into the wilderness and let him go. And it symbolized their, it's known as the scapegoat, released to symbolize the taking away of sin. Some of that's recorded in Hebrews, and the Hebrew writer saw that as a ceremony, this ceremony as an imperfect picture of what Jesus does for us. So different than what we have today, but it was so important for them. Now, just I want to think a little bit about several of the types of sacrifice, and we could spend days and days studying how the Old Testament was laid out and how there are different feasts tied into their worship and how their different worship patterns were. But just real quickly, several different basic types of offerings they had. The burnt offering was a means of consecration and dedication of the worshiper to God. Just go over this briefly, just to kind of familiarize us with it in a general way. So the burnt offering was the most common one, and included confession and removal of sin. They laid their hands on an animal, and their sin was symbolically transferred to the animal, which was then killed and offered on the altar. The meal or cereal offering was a voluntary offering made from grain or flour, and was normally accompanied by other forms of sacrifice. In other words, it was normally part of other sacrifices. The meal offering was sprinkled with frankincense and burned upon the altar, and the remainder was given to the priest for food. It seemed to be a gift made to God to maintain God's favor. The peace offering was a fellowship meal in which the worshiper and his friends sat down to a meal with God in peace. After confession and sacrifice, God's portion of the meal, the fat, was burned upon the altar. The remainder was eaten by the worshiper, his family, and friends. This offering could be used to express thanks, to accompany a vow, or to be a free will offering. In other words, this was kind of a special thing to when they made a vow or when they were doing something with their family, some special commitment to God, they would have this peace offering, which they offered part of it to God, and they sat down and they ate together the rest of it. And then the last two, the guilt offering and the sin offering, were somewhat similar. They were offerings that had to be made when a person had done wrong, had committed an offense against God or against someone else. They were made when a person had become ceremonially defiled, such as through childbirth or leprosy, or when a civil offense was committed against a neighbor. Offense is when a person was overcome, if someone became overcome with emotion and committed a sin against someone else. In other words, for particular wrongs that a person had done, whether it was against someone else or against God, these offerings applied. The blood was poured out in the altar and the fat burned, and the rest of the carcass was taken away and burned. So it wasn't only the blood, was blood and the fat were poured out on the offering and on the altar and burned. The rest was taken away and disposed of. If the offense involved damage to a neighbor, then restitution had to be made also. So you see, these different offerings, these different sacrifices were for different things. But God used the sacrifices to as a way that man could connect with God and could find restitution and could find peace with God in all these different situations. The burnt offering was his way he stayed connected regularly. But then the other offerings came into play in certain situations, and certain were used in certain ways. But they were ways that man connected with God like that. There was no sacrifice that dealt directly with deliberate sin or defiance, rebellion against God's laws. There was no sacrifice that was specifically listed to take care of rebellion. If I had rebelled against God, there was not really an opportunity. And I don't know. I don't feel like I fully understand that, fully comprehend that. However, provision for that was definitely made when Christ came with Christ's sacrifice. That definitely included it. When human beings enter into a covenant relationship with God and keep their side of the bargain, as it is, by avoiding sin, all known sin, there is a desire to enter into a deeper relationship with God and to serve Him, to express. So, as man wants to learn to know God and grow close to Him, this was the way to enter into a deeper relationship with God. It was the way to serve Him. It was the way to express thanksgiving and to have fellowship and to express sorrow for wrong accidentally done. The sacrificial system demonstrated that a deeper relationship with God was possible, but that in order for it to take place, there was a need for continual cleansing from sin. So you had a great desire to learn to know God and to grow closer to Him. Sacrifices was the avenue, that was the tool that you had that you could use to gain God's favor and gain a relationship with Him. And it demonstrated, it helped the Old Testament saints to realize what it took to get a relationship with God, how much different they were than God, how big the gap was between them and God. At the same time, the system was inadequate to meet all needs, and so pointed to the need for another means to be found, not only to establish a deep relationship with God, but to deal with the whole problem of deliberate sin. And we know that's what Christ was the answer for. As He came, He was able to wipe away that annual remembrance of sin that mankind had, and to help to put it to rest for good. So what was the purpose of all this Old Testament? Why did God give them all these directives? Why did God institute sacrifices like this and set this up, set this ritualistic practice? Why did God do all that? And I just touched on that some, but it gave them a picture of the holiness of God, helped understand what holiness really was. All the cleaning that went into it, all the carefulness that the priest needed to do to get ready to sacrifice, all the washing and the purifying that they needed to do to be acceptable to God. The way that the high priest, when he went into the holiest place once a year, most holy place once a year with the string tied to his ankle, it helped them to understand the holiness of God and how important it was to meet His standard of holiness. Secondly, it helped mankind to realize his own sinfulness and his own unholiness, how difficult it was for him to meet God's standard, his inability to please a holy God. It helped man to realize, in ourselves we tend to be lifted up, but helped to put man in his place, help man realize how different he was than God and how far he had to go to meet God on his level. And it helped mankind realize the great cost of sin. It required blood to be shed. And as we look back at that, we think how gruesome that really was. And yet but the giving of life is what God was pointing to. Blood is the life of an animal. Of blood is life, we understand. And it required blood to be shed to cover sin, to pay for the cost of sin. Help man to realize how costly sin truly was. Now, with that in mind, I want to highlight several examples that help us understand how God related to the sacrifice that the man made. So now, going beyond this a little bit, there's several different times through the Old Testament that God gave commendation or condemned sacrifices that were made that help us to understand the mind of God. First of all, thinking of Cain and Abel, Cain obviously didn't follow God's direction. God had given very specific direction. It wasn't just that you were just supposed to make a sacrifice. You were just supposed to give up something yourself and give it to God, and that would be great. That was fine. You had to pay attention to what God said. You had to pay attention and do it God's way. It wasn't just that you gave up something yourself and intended for it to go to God. Another time, also following God's direction for the offering, where there was a failure to do that, Saul was waiting for Samuel to come and offer a sacrifice to entreat the Lord, because their enemies were coming against them. Their enemies were coming against them, and he wanted to make a sacrifice and entreat God's favor so that they could conquer their enemy. And the enemy was gathering and getting more and more prepared and closer, and Samuel didn't come. And they needed to get this sacrifice made so that they could go out and fight against the enemy. There was a serious threat against them, and it was their lives were in peril. And so finally, after 7 days, Saul went and made the sacrifice. And of course, immediately thereafter, Samuel came and asked him why he had done that. And Thou, Samuel said to Saul, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee, for now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever." And Saul gave an excuse. He was worried for his life. He was worried they needed to get this on. He needed to lead and take care of the enemy. But God did not accept that. It was not acceptable to God. It's another case in Leviticus where it gives clear direction about the peace offering of bread and cakes. The one was to be burnt and the rest was to be eaten the day of the offering or the following day. And by the third day, if any remained that had not been eaten, it was supposed to be eaten. It was supposed to be disposed of. And in Leviticus 7, verse 18, it clarifies that if any would be eaten the third day, the soul that eateth of it shall bear his iniquity. In other words, what changes with the food? I mean, you know, what really is so different? But God's word clarified how it was to be done, and it was to be followed that way, or there would be consequences. Example two, or another lesson we can learn from the offerings in the Old Testament, is God already owns the offering. We don't offer it to him because he lacks. I will take from Psalm 50, verses 9 through 14. "I will take no bullock out of thy house, nor he goats out of thy folds, for every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle upon 1,000 hills. I know all the fowls of the mountains and the wild beasts of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell thee, for the world is mine and the fullness thereof. Will I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats? Offer unto God thanksgiving and pay thy vows unto the Most High." The sacrifices that we make to God are not made to him because he needs the things that we give him. They're not, if we sacrifice our life or our time to him, it's not given to him because he has a lack of that and he needs that as such. He owns all things. In the Old Testament, those goats and sheep that they took and offered, and the bullocks, those didn't do God any good. But they made a tremendous impression on the people that offered them, the people that gave them. Really spoke to the one giving the offering to help him to remember that God owns those things and they are God's. And he was giving back to God what was rightfully his. The third example I have from the Old Testament is that God condemned it if it was given with the wrong motive, or with a wicked heart, or with sin hidden in the heart. Proverbs 15, verse 8, The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. The sacrifices they made in the Old Testament, even if they were done just right, even if they followed all the letter of the law, if their heart was wrong, God did not accept it. The offering was useless. It was given in vain. Isaiah 1:11 has the same thought. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me, saith the Lord? I am full of the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts, and I delight not in the blood of bullocks or of lambs or of goats. Isaiah 1:16 and 17. Wash you, make you clean, put away the evil of your doings from before mine eyes. Cease to do evil, learn to do well. Seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widow. That's several verses after the previous verse where he was saying, I'm full of all these other offerings, and he was saying, to remedy it, clean up your life. Do good works. Do right things. Put away the evil of your doings before my eyes. Cease to do evil. Learn to do well. We could go on. There's several other verses that speak very directly to that. It was very clear, and God almost gave more verses in relation to this subject, this point, than many others. Jeremiah 6:20, people rejected God's law, and he says to them, what purpose cometh there to me incense from Sheba and sweet cane from a far country? Your burnt offerings are not acceptable, nor your sacrifices sweet unto me. So God was looking for more than just, it was supposed to be part, given from a right heart, given from a heart condition of worship to him. And it was a necessary part of that, but it was to go together with a right heart before him. Amos 5:22, they were worshiping other gods and also offering to, sacrificing to God. Though ye offer me burnt offerings and your meat offerings, I will not accept them, neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat beasts. It was the right thing to do, but they were supposed to do it out of a right heart. Fourth example I have from the Old Testament is they were supposed to offer their best. Malachi 1:8 speaks to that. If ye offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if ye offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee or accept thy person, saith the Lord of hosts? Thinking of the sacrifices that we make to God, he's not looking for the least or the last. He looked many times, and we could give other examples of that through the Old Testament, where they gave their first fruits, where they gave their best to God. It's a clear teaching from the Old Testament. Now, just going to the New Testament, let's turn. We haven't turned to many verses, but let's turn to Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13, verses 15 and 16. So this talks about a sacrifice that we are to be making in the New Testament. This is, and my thought is just to look at this in light of the Old Testament context of sacrifices, what all went into sacrifices from the Old Testament. Hebrews 13, 15 and 16. By him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. That is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name, but to do good and communicate, and to communicate, forget not. For with such sacrifices, God is well pleased. You know, just thinking who we're doing that to. We're doing that to the God of the universe, the God who is high and holy. And we have many things to that we need his help. We need his help to be restored in our relationship to him. But in other words, we take this seriously. Let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. It's a significant and important thing for us. It's not the last thing on our list for the day, so to speak. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. And it also involves, you know, doing good and communicate to live the way we should. Forget not, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. Now turn to Romans 12, verse 1, where the title would have come from, and one we often think of, that includes all of our lives. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. I was thinking about that in relation to the lessons from the Old Testament. God doesn't want our rejects or the after effects of our lives. He already owns us, but it helps us to understand that we do owe it to him, that we owe him all that we give, and we need to have our heart clear before him. As we do that, as we live our lives, if it's going to be acceptable to him, our heart needs to line up with what we're doing. Some other things that he talks about, a faithful church life. Philippians 4:18, I have all and abound. I am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. I believe he was writing that to a church, if I'm not mistaken. But the things they were doing were an acceptable sacrifice to him. They were a sweet smell to him. They were something that he wanted and he appreciated. But we see what all goes into that, what all goes into an acceptable sacrifice to God. God's church is to be a living sacrifice to him. 1 Peter 2:5, ye also as living, lively stones are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. As we go about our activities, as we go about our church life, as we go about living our lives, it presents a spiritual sacrifice to God and one that he can accept. Sacrificing to God is our reasonable service. Giving ourselves, giving our lives, giving what we have to God is a reasonable service, and goes against the selfish nature that we have, but we understand more about it as we look how God directed in the Old Testament. Need to do it with the right heart and a right motive for God to recognize it. As we live for him, may God help us to keep our heart right, and so that it's in line with the things that we're giving him, so that our sacrifices to him, even though they might cost us something, that doesn't mean that they're worthwhile to him. It has to be part of a pattern, part of a life that's lived in worship to him. Let's come before the Lord and